how cold it is. Even the cows on the altar have blankets today.
Chala Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vanagari Yasuranandana Vrajajanaranjana Yamuna Tera Vamachare Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vanagari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vanagari Asura Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tera Vamachari Yamuna Tera Vamachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vanagari Yasura Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Suranandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tera Vamachari Yamuna Tera Vamachari Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada.
Jaya Nitya Lila Pravista Astakara Sata Sisi Manhus Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shira Prabhupada Jaya Premsika Hosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Shira Vrata Shira Radha Shivasati Gaura Bhakti Nipira Sisi Radha Shama Sundar Gopa Gopinata Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Gira Govardhan Ki Jaya Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya Gaura Vamanandi All glories to the Assembly of Bhagavatam All glories to the Assembly of Bhagavatam. All glories to the Assembly of Bhagavatam. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauram. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 18th chapter, verse 48. Verse 48, yeah, sorry. My brain. Tiraskrita Pralabha Shapta Shipta Hata Api Nasyatat Pratikurvanti Tadbhakta Prabhavo Pimhi Tiraskriti Pralabha Labda Tiraskritya Vipralabda Shapta Shipta Hata Hapi Nasya Tat Pratikurvanti Tat Bhakta Prabhavo Pihi Tiraskritya Vipralabda Tiraskritva Vipralabda Shapta Shipta Hata Api Nasya Tat Pratikurvanti Tat Bhakta Prabhavo Pihi. Please chant. Being defamed. Vipralabdha. Being cheated. Shapta. Being cursed. Shapta. Disturbed by negligence. Hata. Or even being killed. Api. Also. Na. Never. Asya, for all these acts, that them, pratikurvanti, counteract, tat, the Lord's, bhakta, devotees, prabhava, powerful, api, although, ye, certain. Translation. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Rishi Samika also knew that the Lord does not forgive a person who has committed an offense at the feet of a devotee. The Lord can only give direction to take shelter of the devotee. He thought within himself that if Maharaj Parikshit would counter-curse the boy, he might be saved. But he knew also that a pure devotee is callous about worldly advantages or reverses. As such, the devotees are never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, negligence, etc. As far as such things are concerned in personal affairs, the devotees do not care for them. But in the case of their being performed against the Lord and his devotees, then the devotee takes very strong action. It was a personal affair, and therefore Shamika Rishi knew that the king would not take counteraction. Thus, there was no alternative than to place an appeal to the Lord on the behalf of the immature boy. It is not that only the brahmanas are powerful enough to award curses or blessings upon their subordinates. The devotees of the Lord, even though he may not be a brahmana, is more powerful than a brahmana. But a powerful devotee never misuses the power for personal benefit. Whatever power the devotee may have is always utilized in service towards the Lord and his devotees only. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Chanangina Shalakaya Chaksa Unmanita Minatasmai Sri Guru Veda Maha Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharini Nirvisesha Sanyavari Paspachari Shikarani Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pandum Lam Jaya Devirim Yakripata Maham Bande Shri Gurum Vinitagna Vancha Kalpaturubhyasya Kripa Sandhu Vahe Vacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Shri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So this opening line in the purport, it gives us an indication to something that has been previously spoken. It says, Rishi Shamika also knew. This indicates that he spoke something prior to what's being given in this verse. And we know from this chapter that the Rishi has just spent the last six verses chastising his Abhipraka son. Now, as we know from Prabhupada's statements on Sanskrit, when the syllable A is put in front of a Sanskrit word, it changes it to a negative meaning, such as the prayer we just recited, we recite all the time, Ajnana. It's a false negative, or an understanding of a reality that keeps the soul from getting released in this world. It's also indicates a form of mistaken knowledge. It's interesting because similarly, if we take the prefix V and put that in front of a word, it increases it, such as ahankar vimudha. So in this phrase, ahankar means ego, ahankar, false ego, and vimudha. So a mudha, we all know, Prabhupada indicates rascal and ass. But a vimudha, Prabhupada says, is a particularly first class ass. Now, if you're an ass, that's one thing, but if you're first class ass. So, ahankar vimudha, both those are used there. A negative and a very strong negative. So, in this way, Shamaka Rishi uses this word avipaka to describe his son. Now, the root word, vipaka, it indicates mature or ripened knowledge. So we can understand avivika indicates immature knowledge, knowledge that is not fully developed. Now, in the previous verse, Shamika Rishi uses apakva and buddhina, which combined indicate immature intelligence. So all in all, we see that the Rishi is observing the activities of his son and understanding that they're not very good. He chastises his son quite strongly. And he goes down a whole list in these last six verses of what the actions of his son are now going to bring about. And unlike the tendency in our modern world to blame everyone else, to note that, well, it's not my fault, somebody else did such and such and such and like that, he notes here that it's our fault. He uses the word our fault, namely the Brahmins, that will have caused this decline that is about to enter in and introduce itself, if you will, in the Kali Yuga. These six things he's listed in the previous verses here. And he fully embraces the idea that he and his son are representing the Brahmin caste. And by this activity that his son is performing, all the Brahmins will be at fault. So I think it's interesting if we take a moment and focus on this particular point here. We are either directly or indirectly disciples and followers of Srila Prabhupada. And what we do, how we behave, directly impacts how Prabhupada is seen. When we are out in the public, when we are engaging in so-called regular activities, because we are dedicated to Srila Prabhupada, we are therefore representing him. Whether it's direct service to the Lord, such as Harinam or street sankirtan, or whether it's indirect fact that, you know, what we're doing in our regular occupation, mixing with people in the so-called secular world, we're seen as those followers of Bhaktivedanta Swami. And that's how they act. Two examples of this come to mind. There was a period of time in the early days of the devotees going to Vrindavan where it came to Prabhupada's attention that two devotees had changed places with their rickshaw drivers and were having a drag race down the road with each other on the rickshaws, thinking this was great fun. And I'm sure it was great fun. It was certainly something they would have done in their youth on bicycles back in America. But in Vrindavan, as sadhus, as disciples of Srila Prabhupada, being brought by Prabhupada to Vrindavan to show the work he had accomplished, driving rickshaws in a racing style with the rickshaw drivers in the back, was not a good example. This did not bode well on Prabhupada. Another more recent incident here locally, there's a public park here in Alachua, and I work with one man, his name's Nelson. He's a very, very nice man, likes the devotees quite a bit, appreciates what we do. He was sitting in the park with one of his children and with another friend, and they were watching the children play, and he told me across the park there were two devotees. And one of them clearly had their hand in their bead bag, and he said in short order a quite verbal argument began to take place. Very loud, very, not physically aggressive, but verbally aggressive and agitated. And the friend turned to Nelson and said, "Aren't those guys Hare Krishnas?" And Nelson said, "Yeah, looks like it. I thought they were like peaceful, quiet people. And Nelson says, yeah, I guess he just didn't chant enough of his Hare Krishna today. So, on one side, Nelson could appreciate that, oh, they're just regular people like the rest of us. They have the same challenges. But on the other side, it was a public display of inappropriate behavior that was reflecting on Prabhupada's movement. So we can take from this that we should always be careful how we act in public. I remember when I was a young brahmacharya, I was shopping with another brahmacharya friend of mine. This was in, at the time it was called Venture. It was like a Kmart or a Target. I think it was like in between. It wasn't quite as low as Kmart, but wasn't quite as lofty as Target. At any rate, we're pushing the cart, and as can quite accidentally happen, the cart caught the heel of the person in front of us. I don't know if you ever had this happen. It's really painful. I had it happen quite often at work where a pallet jack or something will catch my heel. It's not very nice. And the devotee I was with was pushing the cart, didn't even think the thing of it, just kept on going. And the individual, the person that got bumped, was quite put off by this. To make matters even worse, it was in the days where nobody went out in army clothes. We were in full dhoti and tilak and kurta and shaved head. And so it looked like we just had no proper manners. So we should always be conscious of what we're doing in public. There's a devotee motivational speaker. His name is Peter Burwash. I attended a couple of his seminars back in the 90s. It was quite the thing to do. And he said, we should always speak and act as if Prabhupada were standing right next to us. And that's quite a tall order for us. But that's a nice standard by which we can execute our life. So we should see how we are publicly and personally responsible for what our activities are. And this is exactly what we see here with Samipa Rishi. He understood his son had acted out of avipaka, immature intelligence. And because of that, the entire Brahmin order, which he was representing, would be blamed for this action. Never before had it been seen that a king, who was also a devotee, as Prabhupada says, a Raja Rishi, had been treated so poorly, you know, been cursed for some insignificant thing. Now, was it insignificant or was it not? That may be another point of view that can be looked at. Rishi Shamika, he considered it to be insignificant. His son considered it a great offense, and therefore he placed the curse. The fact that the son stepped up on the father's behalf is admirable. The fact that he took the reaction to that to a degree that was not warranted by the activity was where the difficulty came in. Now, I tried to look up in the different resources I have available on Rishi Shamika. I wasn't able to find much more about his background or life other than what we have in this verses in this chapter here. But from these verses, we can clearly understand what was true brahminical behavior, how he embraced that, how he represented that, even to the point of chastising his own son. And this begins in verse 41. It's noted, the Rishi did not congratulate his son, but on the contrary, he began to repent, saying, alas, what a great sinful act has been performed by my son. He did not take seriously the so-called offense against him. Now, in this scenario, we can't help but be reminded of the equally misguided Ashwatthama, and how Ashwatthama, determined by his own avipaka, misguided intelligence, that it would be a great achievement if he were to go into the camp of the Pandavas. Prabhupada mentions how during the ancient times, in the time of battle, during the day there would be fierce animosity and fighting between the two sides, but at night they would come together in a congenial way, receive each other, exchange foodstuffs, have some conversation. But in this case, Ashwatthama decided that he would slip into the camp while everyone was sleeping and behead the five Pandava boys. He thought this would be the right thing to do. It would seal the success, the victory of his side in the battle, and that when he returned to his master, Duryodhana, he would be very much thanked for this. Oh, you've done a very great task. Thank you so much. Instead, as we know, even the most cripple-minded Duryodhana could understand that this activity of Ashwatthama was not noteworthy, was not to be appreciated, and was certainly not to be celebrated as Ashwatthama thought it was. In a similar way, Sringi, he was convinced that the activity he had performed on behalf of his father, as Ashwatthama performed this activity on behalf of Duryodhana and the whole Kaurava army, that this will be awarded, you know, this is what I should do to right the wrong that has been done to my father. His father did not consider it much of a thing, and certainly, as we see from those six verses, did not congratulate his son. Oh, you've done a great thing. Thank you so much. What is it, Prabhupada? I was listening to a lecture a couple of days ago, and Prabhupada describes, he was talking about animal killing and how the animals are also children of God. He says, if a man has two sons, and one of those sons is handicapped. Prabhupada uses a variety of words in how he tells this story, but if one of the sons is handicapped and incapable of caring for himself, and the other son is making a lot of money, and he thinks his son is useless, let me just kill him. He said, in no way will the father think, oh, you've done a very good thing. You're making so much income, and this son is doing nothing. Thank you for getting rid of him. The father will not be happy with that. In the same way, Duryodhana, despite his shortcomings, was not happy with the actions of Ashwatthama. And in a similar way, Rishi Shamika was not happy with the activity of his son Sringi. Sringi was convinced that this king was, you know, making a great offense against his father. Now, we see starting in this last verse, text 47, and also in this verse, 48, in these two verses, the Rishi, after chastising his son for six verses, now turns his prayer towards the personality of Godhead. He realizes that it will be in the best benefit of my son if the king counter-curses him. That will be to his benefit, because then all of this will be negated. But he knows he's dealing with a Rajarishi. He's dealing with a very saintly king who's a devotee of the Lord and not going to take this. So he therefore realizes all he can do is turn his attention, turn his prayers, and beseech the Lord for forgiveness. And as today points out, he describes the qualities of a devotee in a situation like this. And they're named in this verse here. If a devotee is treated unfairly by being, number one, defamed, number two, cheated, number three, cursed, number four, disturbed, number five, neglected, and number six, even killed. If a devotee is treated with any of these six types of behaviors, he is never inclined to avenge himself. So we can ask ourselves, we can analyze ourselves, which is something we should be doing in our path of devotional life, how quick am I to jump to my own defense when I think any of these things have happened to me? How large is my ahankara, my false ego, to think any of the following thoughts? Don't they know who I am? I shouldn't be treated like this. I'm a senior Prabhupada disciple. I should get more respect than that. I'm a fill in the blank. Book distributor, temple president, temple commander, pujari, life membership director, a head cook, and so on and so on and so on. They shouldn't do that. They can't treat me like that. I'll get them for this. Or as I was once told, you're going to pay for speaking to me like that. So how quickly do we jump to these mentalities, these six mentalities, when any of these six things happen to us? How quickly does our false ego kick into gear, so to speak? So this is the way we can judge our advancement, judge how we're improving in our devotional life. How much am I willing, how much am I eager to retaliate against those who do me wrong? That classic phrase there, do me wrong. Or how much am I not inclined to avenge myself, as this verse says? Valuable statement in this purport is, the devotees are never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, or negligence. Are we actually a devotee? This is the definition given of a devotee here. Many definitions in Shastra are given of what a devotee is. One definition given here that we can use to apply to ourselves. The devotee is never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, or negligence. You know, I went to such and such place and they didn't even, you know, greet me. I didn't get a garland and nobody gave me a chair to sit on or praise my entrance. You know, we think like that. Oh, I was neglected. You know, what to speak of being cursed or defamed? You know. These are all the different ways that we should take such insults. They'll come. It's the nature of this world. What about the insult giver, though? How should that person be thinking? That's a whole other way to look at this. Well, again, the Rishi, he gives us an example in this. Rishi Shamaka also knew that the Lord does not forgive a person who has committed an offense at the feet of a devotee. This statement should scare us. There are certain things in life that scare us. We find a mouse in the house, you know, we become a little frightened, oh, the mouse, you know. Or, you know, there's, you know, it's a dark alley and we're having to walk down it in a questionable neighborhood or, you know, so many different things that scare us. A statement like this should scare us, should make us be very apprehensive about criticizing a devotee. Yet, in this day and age, we see many persons, some in the dress of devotees, who are quite eager to criticize, to fault find, to speak ill of, to heap piles of despairing remarks on the character of another devotee. We should always be very cautious in this regard. Out of politeness and respect, I won't mention any name, but there's a certain individual who made it a life's goal of finding fault in every member of ISKCON and ran such a website. And not just casually pointing out faults, just horrendously speaking horrible, horrible things. And that individual recently left his body. Many people question, how did he live as long as he did? But at that time, the individual's wife stepped forth on his behalf and prayed to the devotees to please forgive her husband and please not hold any grudge against him for his mistakes. So, you know, this activity of criticizing devotees never bodes well for us. Chaitanya Bhagavat tells us how much it does not bode well for us. particularly in the story of the deliverance of Jagai and Madhva. Of course, we all know in full detail the story of Jagai and Madhva and how just horrible personalities they were. Yamaraj says to his scribe, Chandragupta, or is it Chandragupta speaking it to Yamaraj? I forget which way it goes, but one of them is speaking to the other. He says, if all of your scribes spent 1,000 years, they could not list the offenses and sinful activities of these two brothers, particularly those they have committed against devotees. So at any rate, ultimately they're delivered. Wonderful story by the grace of Nityananda and Haridas Thakur. Actually, when they first went out, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would send Haridas and Nityananda out as a team, you know, Sankirtan team. And they encountered Jagai and Madhai, and of course Jagai and Madhai chased them and, you know, chastised them verbally and all. And Haridas Thakur came back, Chaitanya Bhagavat explains, and he said to Mahaprabhu, he said, what are you doing to me? He said, you're sending me out with this Nityananda who's drunk on love of God, and we're encountering these two Jagai and Madhai who are drunk on liquor. I'm the only sober man in the group. So, at any rate, we know the story. It's a very famous story, and Jagai and Madhai are ultimately delivered. And when they're delivered, they're embraced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Imagine, Mahaprabhu embraces. And as he embraced them, the manifestation of all of their sinful activities rose above them as a dark cloud and then entered into the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His bodily appearance turned dark as a result of this. And Mahaprabhu then cast that off and explained that anyone who criticizes a devotee, the collection of these sins will enter into them. That's a pretty serious statement. If you want to be afraid of something, Mahaprabhu himself, so it's not like, oh, a devotee said, well, you know, maybe he was right, maybe he was wrong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says that anyone that offends my devotees, this collective sins of these two brothers will go to them. Now, our acharyas tell that there was also an internal higher meaning why Mahaprabhu took on that darker color, but that's a different story for another class. So this is how cautious we have to be. And this is why Rishi Shamaka knew that they were in trouble. They've offended a devotee. Maharaj Parikshit is not only a devotee from before his birth, but personally protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead during Ashwatthama's other misguided attempt at securing victory. So, he knew, Rishi Shamaka, he knew the nature of Maharaj Parikshit, and that's why in the purport it says, therefore, Shamika Rishi knew that the king would not take any counteraction. He knew that because this was an offense against him personally, that he was not going to make any counteraction for that activity. It wasn't an offense against another devotee that as the king he had to protect the devotee, or you know, when he came across the personality of Kali chastising the bull and the cow and he immediately went to kill him. You know, that was a required reaction. Another a devotee, the personality of religion, the manifestation of religious self was being attacked. Therefore, he had to step forward strongly. This was not such a case. This was an offense against him personally. Therefore, he just dismissed it. And Rishi Shamaka understood this, that because he's a great devotee, he's going to dismiss this activity. The father knew if the king will act against my son, that will be for the son's benefit and will relieve his burden. But he also knew that the king was not going to do this because he was such a great devotee. Therefore, or as we also know, in conclusion, we might say, he realized that he had no choice left but to appeal to this personality of Godhead for the deliverance of his son. The devotees often, and when they're in good consciousness, turn to the Lord for their deliverance when they're in a difficult situation. This reminds me of a wonderful story I've been reading from the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about a devotee who committed a wrong, and the other devotees appealed to the Lord, but in this case, the Lord chose not to give his shelter or to even get involved. And that story would be Gopinath Patanayaka. Gopinath Patanayaka was one of the five sons of Bhavananda Roy. And it's clearly confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita and in Kavi Karnapur and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's writings that Bhavananda Roy was an incarnation of Pandu. And that his five sons were incarnations of the five Pandavas. So, very, very exalted devotees. And many times in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this family is declared and described as a family of pure devotees. So, they were tax collectors, they were administrative officials under the king. In the state of Orissa, there were many subdivisions, many territories, you might say, states under the rule of Orissa. And Orissa was overseen by Prataparudra Maharaj. And then the smaller states had smaller kings, like governors, we might call them. And they appointed different individuals to do the activities of the government. And Bhavananda Roy's family were involved in this. We know Ramananda Roy was such a minister. And so Gopinath Patanayaka, he was a tax collector. And his business was to collect the tax and turn it over to the government. But it came to be found that he was keeping back 200,000 kanahas, which was the currency at that time. It was a considerable amount of money, but it was a small fraction of what he was collecting. And the interesting thing is that it was noted that by Mahaprabhu himself, he said this, he said he's, well, I'm getting ahead of myself in the story, I'm sorry. So at any rate, it was found that he had misappropriated these funds. And so the governor, under Prataparudra Maharaj, ordered that he should be arrested, so to speak, so that the money could be returned. And during that time, he appointed the prince in charge of dealing with this. The prince did not particularly like Gopinath Patanayaka. But Gopinath Patanayaka said, okay, look, I admit I've misappropriated this money. My apologies. I don't have the money right now to pay you, but I have these 12 really fine horses. And I'll give them to you as, you can hold them until such time I can raise the funds and pay it back, and then I can get the horses returned like that. So the king said, all right, I'll appoint the prince to assess the value of the horses, whether they're suitable, payment, so to speak. These are really good horses. Now, as it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the prince had a little tick, as we would call it nowadays. He would turn his head to the kind of a thing and look up at the sky, kind of like that, a little twitch. And as I mentioned, he was not particularly fond of Gopinath Patanayaka, so he undervalued the horses, at which Gopinath couldn't help himself. If he had no control over spending 200,000 kanahas inappropriately, he couldn't help himself from criticizing the prince. Well, you've undervalued my horses, but at least they don't turn their neck up like this. So, this did not do well for him, and the prince decided, okay, we're going to put him on the changa and put him to death. The changa is a rather horrible type of death. You're put up on a huge platform, and at the bottom of this platform is a pit with swords mounted blade up. And then you're pushed off that into the pit to fall upon these swords and immediately die. So Gopinath is actually on the Chanka platform. And the devotees all go to Mahaprabhu and they beg him, you know, Mahaprabhu, please, Gopinath is a member of your family. He's one of your devotees. He's the son of Bhavananda Roy. You must save him. Mahaprabhu says, you want me to go before the king and spread out my cloth like a common beggar and beg for the life of Gopinath? Yet Gopinath has committed great mistakes. He is spending this money in the most sinful of ways. Much of this money he is spending on dancing girls. We'll leave that as it is for another discussion. But Mahaprabhu refuses to get involved. He says, I'm not going to. Gopinath is. And then Mahaprabhu begins to speak about what a great sin it is if a government representative takes money from the government and uses it for their own means. In two or three verses, he speaks about this. So anyway, this is going on. So Kashi Mishra, who was an intermediate between Mahaprabhu and Pratapa Rudra Maharaj, since Mahaprabhu won't see the king, he goes to Pratapa Rudra Maharaj and explains to him what's going on. Pratapa Rudra Maharaj knew nothing of this. He does not want Gopinath thrown on the Chanka. He just wanted the money returned. He says, as a matter of fact, I'll just forget the whole thing. I don't want it, because what had happened is that Mahaprabhu had decided, okay, you're bringing all these difficulties to me from troubled devotees are causing themselves. I'm just going to leave Jagannathpuri. I'll go somewhere else. So it comes to the ears of Pratapa Rudra Maharaj that because of this incident, Mahaprabhu is going to leave. So the king says, oh no, I don't want Mahaprabhu to leave. So I'll forgive the debt to Gopinath. What do I care for 200? This is insignificant. Matter of fact, I'll forgive the debt, and if he needs the money, he's taking this money unjustly, then I'll double his salary. So so he says, let all that happen. I just don't want Mahaprabhu to leave. So then Kashi Mishra reports to Mahaprabhu that Pratapa Rudra Maharaj has decided to forgive Gopinath. He doesn't want you to leave, and therefore, you know. And Mahaprabhu doesn't like that either. He says, now you've made me the reason that Gopinath is being delivered from what the sinful activity he's done. So I don't want to get involved in this, so I'm going to leave again. So he's speaking in this way. So this is an example where a devotee has done something incorrectly, where there is action taken against him, where the Lord is requested to intercede in this, and he declines. So we do have both sides of the coin here. But in this particular case with Shamika Rishi, he's understanding that the Lord is very merciful. Maharaj Parikit is not going to curse my son. He's not going to do anything about what happened to him, what happened to me, and the curse that was given to him as a result. Therefore, my only objective is to approach the Lord. And he has full expectation that he will get that deliverance. But what we can conclude from this story, what we should conclude, is that we should be very, very careful not to offend a Vaishnava. Or not to be concerned if someone commits an offense against us. If that should happen, we should act in the manner described in this verse. Not be concerned about, you know, am I being neglected? Am I being cursed or cheated or whatever? We should simply put those things aside. And sometimes that's harder. There's been situations in my own life where I've been cheated out of, you know, considerable amounts of money by another devotee. And it may take some effort and time to put these things behind us. But it is necessary to do so. It is important to do so. We should always try to see how can I come to the standard of devotional life that's described in these verse, in this verse right here, verse 47 and 48 particularly. So that's my thoughts on this particular verse. We'll finish there. Thank you all for giving me this opportunity to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. If anyone has any comments or questions, Prabhuji?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead and grab the microphone. Yeah. Well, hold on. I gotta adjust my hearing aids too.
Oh no, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a series of. Yeah, I should have done this at the beginning of the class. Yeah, go ahead.
No, the verse says something about even if one is killed, he doesn't want to revenge himself. But in the beginning of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's talking about aggressors should be dealt with. So. What happens if someone attacks with a devotee with a lethal weapon? He should protect himself. No, I mean.
Well, there is a necessity to protect oneself. At the same time, there's a higher principle that can be seen also. You know, both things can be applicable, but in general. We do not want to retaliate against others. And primarily, although in the purport, or actually in the verse, the indications that there are very strong actions against a devotee, generally in our situation, we find that it's not usually quite so drastic. No one's trying to kill us. You know, they may be trying to cheat us, or they may curse at us, or disturb us, or neglect us, defame us. These things are primarily what we see. If someone's trying to kill me, then yeah, okay, I'm definitely going to protect myself. But more to the point, someone is usually there that can step in. You know, that's the duty of a friend. You know, if you're, you know, this is why association is always good. You know, if something like this does happen, then someone can be there to protect us. But good point. Both sides of the coin.
There's another one that even to the point of verbal insult or something. Mini Ketan Ramdas, when he was attending the Sankirtan festival at Krishnadas Kaviraj's house. He was insulted, and he became angrier like that, no?
The anger was not by the person who had been insulted. The anger was by those that witnessed it. The insulted did not retaliate against the insulter. But all those in the company did. They threw him out, they banned him from their association, you know, they apologized on his behalf, like that. Yeah.
Oh.
Thank you for that, Pandurek. All right, so we'll finish there. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.